trends for your home and garden, combined with a twist of the past. Welcome back, everyone. It's May and it's sunny. I hope all of you are enjoying the nice warm weather we're having. Well, hopefully you're having warm weather where you are. But first off, I hope you guys all had a nice, wonderful Mother's Day and that all you mothers out there were treated like queens. Anyway, we have a nice show lined up today. We're going to have a special guest, Susan Cohan, who is a New Jersey-based landscape designer. She's going to offer some of her own design expertise. And we're going to talk a little bit about tomatoes. I should let you guys know that my lovely podcast co-host has a cold. Yeah, so let's all be sure to feel sorry for Teresa and know that she was a trooper to get up on this fine May morning and talk about gardening and landscape design and all that sorts of good stuff that we're going to have on our show today. But what is going on over in your neck of the woods, Teresa?
Oh my gosh, Jamie, the weather is so beautiful here right now. There's a soft breeze blowing. All the trees are blooming, so it's really sweetly scented. And I've got a ton of radishes about to be harvested and lettuces and different spring greens, some of which have self-seeded themselves in strange places around the garden, which is pretty funny. How's everything growing in your garden?
You know what? It's great. We've had, you know, some bouts of rain and sunshine mixed in there, so everything is really, really flourishing. And I have to say that my living wall that I constructed a few weeks ago, which I keep promising I'm going to have a how-to blog, but you know what? And I will have it, but it's just taking a little bit of time. You know, some new happenings have come up. And
Yes, let's congratulate Jamie on her new book deal with Cold Springs Press.
Yes, I know. I'm really excited about that. And my life is going to be turned upside down to pump out this book here in the next few months. But
let's back up a second. So tell us what the name of the book is and when is it coming out and what's it about and all the good stuff.
Well, the for sure title is going to be Garden Rules. And it's basically a book that is for the wannabe gardener. You know, there are so many books inundating the bookstore shelves these days about growing your own food and ornamentals and herbs and this and that. And there's just so many options. So this book really sets out to be something memorable that you can read a headline. You know, anybody can remember and implement in their own backyards. So it's kind of one of those tipping points kind of books. You know, it's one of those things that is really going to get somebody interested in gardening. It'll be fun. And then, you know, it'll open their minds to other garden books that are out there that can actually tell you the how-tos.
So it's a good overview to get people interested, and then they can go to other books for more information.
Exactly.
Like grocery gardening or square foot gardening or those kind of books.
Yeah, where they can really specialize, you know, once they figure out what kind of garden they want to have, they can then buy the book that really talks about that certain specific topic.
Very exciting.
I know, it is. It's very exciting. Thank you. So let's get back to the gardens here because, you know, with the rain and the warmer weathers, you know, it's when the pests come. I mean, if you grow it, they're going to come and they're going to just, you know,
they need to eat too.
That's true. I know. This is, you know, a world of many creatures that, whatever, I don't know. Let's not get into that. But, okay, you talked about radishes, which I actually have harvested most of my radishes, if you can believe that. Uh-huh. I've made radish pesto, which I actually kind of think I like it better than regular basil pesto.
Really? I need that recipe. You have to put that on the podcast.
I have so many
radishes, and I have no way of knowing what to do with them all. So great. I want that.
I know. And you know what, Teresa, is so I've made the pesto out of the radish leaves, right? But you're right. Now I have all these radishes in. I can't say that radishes are the most easiest thing to store. I mean, you know, if you leave them in the refrigerator once you cut off the greens, then they kind of get all shrivelly. You put them in water, you know, so they absorb the moisture. If you leave them in there too long, they get kind of mushy and gross, you know?
Well, that's the point of growing them and eating them right away.
Exactly.
For the ultimate nutritional value.
Right. So I think, mental note for next year, I'm not going to grow as many radishes as I did this year because I honestly, I can't eat them that quickly.
Yeah, I bet.
But I made
It's
this.
fun to try all the different ones, though. I mean, that's what I'm doing, and so when you try, you find yourself wanting to have at least three or four of each variety rather than 75 of one
I know
variety.
exactly. I
It's a
don't need
little
to.
more expensive that way, but at least you have some variety in your diet, right?
Exactly. But and I think I'll put up this potato salad recipe that I made with the radish pesto, okay? But then I also, you boil the little red potatoes and then you cut up some chunks of radishes. Yeah, so I think that's a way of using the whole radish in one recipe, but I can't say that I want to have potato salad for the next few months because
You're done with
I'm
it.
done with potato salad now. But
Well, that's what's so exciting because now I just went to the annual sale that's held by our local farmer and bought some heirloom tomatoes. And so I'm going to be, slowly harvesting all this radishes and lettuces and spring greens up and then replacing them with tomatoes and peppers and eggplants and beans and squash and all the vegetables that I couldn't plant until the last official frost date, which usually averages May 10th in our area.
unfortunately, got distracted and waited way too long to start my tomatoes indoors. You and I were talking before that it's hard to start tomatoes from seed, but I
I
want.
have done it before, Jamie,
Yeah.
but I've done it before, but you really need the right conditions. You definitely need to have the seeds warm enough to germinate, so you'll need to get a warming,
A warming
what am I
mat?
trying to say? One of these warming mats for your seeds that you start inside. And you really need to start them quite a bit ahead of time to
Yeah.
get them large enough and hardened up enough to put out there. And it's the same with eggplants and peppers too. They're from the same family, and they are a little bit more difficult to germinate. But you can find a lot of really great heirlooms from your farmer's market. If you go to my blog, you'll see that I show a number of pictures of tomato plants that I saw at my own farmer's market. A lot of the local farmers and nurseries now are selling great heirlooms, and I list a number of heirlooms that you might want to try. Like, I would imagine green zebra would do great in Oregon.
Well, you know what? I like a challenge. So I'm still going to try and grow all of those things from seeds because gosh darn it, I'm going to make it happen.
You
So,
should.
I know whether or not I'm going to create this little mini tropical oasis in my garage, I'll do it. I'll do it because I want those tomatoes and I want to say I grew that from seed. Okay?
Well, I think it's definitely worth it, but now it's too late for you this year.
Yeah, that's
But at
true.
least you can think about that next year and allow yourself plenty of time. But in the meantime, now's the time to start getting those tomatoes in the ground. And there's a number of things that people can do to keep, their tomato plants healthier. For example, you want to avoid watering overhead. You want to water down by the roots, and that way you can avoid a lot of fungal diseases. You want to water irregularly and deeply, not in a shallow way. If you smoke cigarettes, or anyone you know who smokes cigarettes, don't let them touch your plant because that'll spread tobacco mosaic. It's good to mulch with tomatoes. That really helps to keep a lot of fungal diseases down. And it's very consistent to keep tomatoes. You want to avoid these periods of drought and then lots of water because that can cause blossom rot.
Right, and is
So,
that where, the bottom of your tomato has that nice brown, ugly.
exactly.
Okay.
And it is a calcium deficiency, but the problem is that there's in the watering is so irregular that that's what's causing the plant to not be able to absorb the calcium in
I
the soil.
see. Okay, that makes a lot of
So
sense.
just adding a bunch of calcium back to your soil at that point is not going to help you.
Right, 'cause
So
the water
even though it
helps.
is a cal
Okay.
it's the watering, right?
Well,
And also if you're worried about short growing seasons, you can grow some of those ones that ripen a lot faster, like 50 and 60 days, rather than some of the heirlooms that need like 85 and 90 days.
So for beginning gardeners, let's talk about a couple things because I think there are some common things that new gardeners might not be aware of. You talked about the shorter growing seasons, okay? So look at the varieties that are 50 to 60 days, right? As opposed
That's
to if you have a shorter growing season.
Oh, just pay attention to how long it takes to mature so that you can spread it out. And if you're going to grow several plants, you can have some that start 50 to 60 days after transplanting, some that are more 75 to 80 days. And then if you're in a longer period, then you can go up to 90 days. Because, you know, Brandywine, for example, which is a very popular heirloom, that does need 85 days, 80 to 85 days. And I've made the mistake of growing all those big old beefsteak kind of heirlooms, and they all come all at once, and then we have a frost the next week, and I'm stuck with a ton of green tomatoes and a broken heart, you know? So don't do that to yourself.
There you go. Learn from Teresa's mistakes. You know, in learning from
Exactly.
mistake,
Don't have my broken heart. And you know, I list a number of heirlooms. So you'll see there's a number there. And if you go look around at that, you'll see there's a number of tomatoes that do well in containers. There's some that are cherry tomatoes tend to come pretty quickly. And cherry tomatoes come in a whole bunch of different colors now.
I know, and they're
So.
just so fun to just go out in the garden and just pick off and eat them right off the vine. And you know what? And my
Ex
dogs like to do that too. So I did want to ask you one more thing about tomatoes, and then we're going to get on to
Okay.
our special guest here on the Nest and Style podcast, because it is a podcast. It's not a vlog anymore, okay? We are going through a transition period. And you know what, Teresa? You saw the website, right? You saw the website. It's real. We are almost there.
Oh yeah, there's going to be lots of improvements coming, you guys. Bear with us.
I know, it's happening.
Jimmy's got big plans, big
Big
plans.
plans, yeah. So real quick,
Besides teaching the world to garden.
teach you the world of garden. Yeah, I'm not like
Yes,
the world's garden expert, but you know, I'm into making gardening fun, and I know you are too. So that's why we make the perfect pair. All right, well, and Teresa, I know there's a little trick about planting tomatoes. You know, I remember my master gardener when I bought my first transplant, is she told me to snip off the bottom two leaves and bury the tomatoes deep.
Well, I think that's a good idea. And when you're buying tomato plants, don't buy the really long, tall, big ones. Buy the ones, I mean, if you have a choice, try to buy the nice, healthy, wider plants that are beginning to develop strong, healthy roots. That way, your plant can grow big and tall in your particular place.
Right, you
And
want
if you're
strong,
growing,
healthy roots in your soil, not the nursery container, right?
exactly, you don't want the nursery container to be root bound either, to have the roots coming out the bottom. So look for healthy green leafy plants. And I know, for example, the plants that I bought really need to get in the ground, but it's been too cold here. You really want to make sure that the temperature is warming up to the 70s and that the nighttime temperature is keeping from above 40 degrees. And here we really can have an unexpected frost at night, or
I
at
know, we
least drop.
can too. I know you really have to be aware of that frost date. And I know we're talking a little long about tomatoes, and we'll have plenty of resources on the podcast page about how to grow them, which ones to grow, and stuff like that. But one last question, and then we're going to get on to our special Nest and Style podcast guest. Do you feel the red lining, you know, that red plasticky stuff, do you think that helps warm the soil and
Well, I believe that there was research done by Clemson University that showed that the red mulch was more effective in attracting hot sun. And so I have never used that because I here in Idaho, we have long, long days in the summer. I mean, our sun doesn't go down until 10:30 at night in the winter.
my
Same
gosh.
with you probably
Right.
too
No,
in the
yeah.
Northwest. So we have long days and hot days and not a lot of moisture in the air, so we don't have a lot of fungal diseases. So our tomatoes here can grow over 6, 7 feet tall. I mean, it's almost scary.
That is
It
scary.
it's wonderful, really.
I know. Have you like
So
lost any cats to your have you lost any cats to your tomato plants at all? I mean, do you find that they go missing? No, I'm just kidding.
no, it's not that scary because I keep them staked well, but it is pretty wonderful to go out there and then come back with a whole bushel full of tomatoes. And so what you want to try to avoid is making sure that they're all green because you're about to have a frost in 2 days and you have a million tomatoes that haven't ripened yet.
If any of you who are listening have tried the red plastic mulch, make a comment. You know, let us know if it works, and other readers will benefit. So you can just comment on the podcast page. That would be totally helpful. All right, you know
Yes.
what? Let's drop the tomato thing. I'm done with talking about tomatoes. I
Oh, can
want
I
to.
say one more thing about tomatoes?
Okay. Okay.
Just one more thing, and
Yeah.
then we'll go on to your special desk. I grew tomatoes last year in earth boxes, not to give them any special commercial, but because
Well, that's
I
okay.
am
I mean,
earth.
if you think earth boxes are great, let's say earth
Well,
boxes seven times. It's okay.
I felt that these I needed to rotate crops in my garden because I love everything from the tomato family, peppers and eggplants and so on, and you can't grow them in the same place every year.
That's right.
So by having the earth boxes, I'm able to actually grow tomatoes in those containers for more than 1 year. And they have a black plastic mulch that goes across the top that helps to keep weeds down as well. And with tomatoes, it's very important for mulching in some way because you don't want the disease spores to splash back up on your plants. It's so you definitely want to have some kind of mulch. And these earth boxes, they're not even very deep. In most cases with containers, you need a big enough container so you can get room for the roots. But the earth boxes are amazingly shallow, and yet these tomatoes do grow quite large. And I wouldn't say they grew as large as they did in the ground, but they did amazingly well for a small spot. So that's something else to think about if you don't have a lot of room in your garden and you love all the vegetables from the tomato family, the eggplants and this and the peppers and the tomatoes of all kinds, then think about growing them in containers like earth boxes.
There you go. That is a great piece of information.
And now we are done with tomatoes, aren't
Now we're done
we?
with tomatoes.
For the
I
moment.
know. Maybe we should do a whole podcast on tomatoes, but
Well,
anyway,
I think we should do a taste test for sure.
that would be great.
Yes, a
That's a very
virtual
good idea.
taste test.
Okay. Now let's get on to our special guest, Susan Cohan, who is an award-winning designer from the New Jersey area. I've met her in person a few times, I'm sorry, not a few times. I've had a chance to talk with her. I think she's an amazing woman. I mean, this woman, she just kind of intimidates me, knowing
With
how
her
smart she
talent.
with her talent. Yeah, she's not like a
Susan, you intimidate us
I
with your talent.
yeah, she's not like a scary woman. She's very nice and very pleasant. But she started out in the fashion industry, if you can believe that. But she decided to move on to landscape design because she's always had this growing, this garden passion. And so she decided to take her knowledge of design and partner it with her passion for gardening. And boom, now she's a landscape designer. You've been a landscape designer for most of your life, is that right?
No, I've been a designer. I've designed lots of different things from jewelry to children's wear to women's clothing to objects. But landscape design is kind of the last iteration of that evolutionary process.
I'd like to know, how did you even get interested in landscape, and tell us why for you it's so much more satisfying as a designer.
I think, like so many people, I started off as a gardener. One of my earliest memories is of sitting with my grandmother in her garden, shelling peas. And then when I was about 10, we moved from a somewhat urban environment to a very, very suburban environment. And my father, in his infinite wisdom, built a garden for each one of the kids in the family. It stuck with me, and I gardened every place I lived, from my windowsill in a college dorm room to a renovated tenement that I worked on in Brooklyn. Always there was always some kind of garden there. I always looked at it as a kind of as something that I just did as a hobby, as something that I was interested in and that was beautiful. After I became a mom, it became something that I could do outside with a small child in the backyard where I didn't have to sit there because, quite frankly, he could run around and be a maniac and I didn't have to be bored.
So, as a designer who has had so many experience in other aspects of design, not just with landscapes, do you feel that you bring anything unique to the landscape design industry that maybe your peers wouldn't have, just because they don't have the experience that you do in other design disciplines?
I'm gonna back into that question a little bit. I think what makes me different from and makes my approach different from other landscape and garden designers is that I don't ever approach the product from a plant or the end product from a plant perspective.
Explain what you mean by that.
I love plants, but I often use the analogy of a wedding cake. You know, when you look at a wedding cake, you see the beautiful white cake and all of the flowers or decorations that are on it. What you don't see is the structure that's allowed the tiers to be formed and the icing to, you know, the main icing to be put on and the structural things and the overall idea of the form. What you see is kind of the romance of the flowers and the wedding and all of that at the end. And gardens are very much like that. You don't see that structure. You don't see all of the thought that goes into how you travel down a path to get you to a destination. What you see is what's alongside the paths and things that you can stop and look at that are detail. And for me, plants are the detail. Now, I know my plants. I love plants. I use them as a design element, but they're the last element.
I see. Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, because just from what I've known that, you know, when I've created a path myself, you know, just using your example, and knowing that, gosh, there's something not right about this path. What is it? You know, it's maybe that I'm lacking the focal point that is at the end of the path that really is making that exploration down the path so enjoyable, not necessarily just the plants that are alongside of it.
I think that you just hit the nail on the head.
Excellent. I should become a designer. That's it.
Absolutely. It's all over.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for your help. I've decided what I want to be when I grow up.
All right.
Well, so let's take that knowledge that a lot of homeowners don't have that you can offer them. At what point will somebody call you and say, you know what, I can't do this myself. I want you to come in and redo my yard. Is there a certain point or a thought process that you have found people go through before they call you? Or is it just kind of like, well, I've got money to spend. Why don't you redo my backyard for $40,000?
It's never I've got money to spend at this point. I mean, at this point, economically, even the most expansive projects have newly frugal clients. Now, with a big landscape project or even a small garden project, very many people believe that they can just do it in an ad hoc manner. But you wouldn't renovate your bathroom in an ad hoc manner. So why would you renovate your garden in an ad hoc manner? You wouldn't renovate your kitchen without a plan. Why would you build a patio or a deck or a garden without a plan? It's the same thing, but most people, you know, think that it's a rake and a shovel and a plant and or plants and you've got a garden. It's so much more than that. I think that people don't know often either what they were missing until maybe their projects are done and they've been drawn outside and they've been drawn to use their outdoor space. Whether you live in a four-season climate or a three-season climate, it doesn't matter. It's compelling. You know, it's a compelling design problem. How can I get people outside to use their land and appreciate their land and get beyond just looking outside? Gardens are, you know, experiential. They're not just something to look at.
Right. So I kind of feel like you're saying, you know, they kind of come to a crossroads where, like, you know, I'd really like to sit out here and enjoy my space. And it's possibly something that I can't handle on my own. You know, it's more than just, you know, putting little pansies in a pot and making your patio look pretty.
Although that's fine. That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. But I think if you want to have an outdoor space that's compelling, you have to start with a plan. Whether you build it or not, it doesn't really matter. You know, but you have to start with something planned out.
I see.
And I think that that's when people come to me, when they realize that they'll be a lot better off if they simply have the roadmap. Whether they build part of it or all of it or do it themselves or hire somebody or hire somebody for some of it and not for the rest of it. That really depends on, you know, the individual
Right,
client.
right. Or they can be like me, where they say, you know what, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can recreate what I see in a magazine, and then a year later go, oh, I forgot to put in the irrigation. Whoops. Well, so we earlier back in Seattle, I had an opportunity to talk with Christina Sawitz, who is a personal garden coach, and it
Yes, she is.
seems to be that's kind of like a new term, you know, that I don't know how many years ago, but that Susan Harris had created. At what point does somebody say, I want a garden coach or I want a landscape designer? What are your
A
thoughts?
garden coach is someone who's going to come on site and work side by side with the homeowner, and show them the potential for what they have now with some augmentation, let's say,
Okay.
some addition or some gardening, you know, some good garden practices and some additions of maybe plants or containers or, but they work, a garden coach is exactly that. It's like a personal trainer for your garden.
Okay, that's a great analogy right there.
A landscape designer or a garden designer is going to look at what you have now and either say, look, this really isn't working. Let's rescue whatever plants we can, put them aside and start fresh. Or they may come on site and say, you know, you've got a good start here, but here's what we can do to make it better. And they will give you a plan.
I see.
The difference between a garden coach is a garden coach does a lot of what they do on site with the owner.
Okay.
Whereas a garden designer or a landscape designer is going to come on site, evaluate the site, certainly talk to the person who owns the garden, and then is going to go away and come back with an organized space
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
includes a lot of elements. Can include a lot of elements or a few elements.
What do you find, you know, most likely when you're working with a client and you go to their backyard? There's always, you know, when somebody hires, I think, a landscape designer, they're obviously looking to improve what they already have. In your opinion, what do you think is the number one thing homeowners are lacking in their backyards that you always find yourself constantly having to add?
I don't, you know, every situation is different. I think it's more of a philosophical and knowledge-based lack than it would be a thing.
Okay.
First of all, there is no such thing as a no-maintenance garden. Plants
What?
grow. There are plants that need less care. There are garden styles and garden, you know, types of gardens that can be lower care, but there is no such thing as a no maintenance garden. Even a concrete slab needs to be hosed off every now and then.
Yes.
You know, so I think that, you know, when people say I want a low maintenance garden, but then they want their what they want in their low maintenance garden doesn't meet the criteria for that. So I think
I think that's a good point because
like an owner garden marriage counselor have to kind of mediate between what the garden can be or what they want and what their expectations are.
Right, and what their limitations are, you know, and what they can take care of once the land is, you know, landscape designer has moved on to the next home. I think even when talking with my friends, and I'm not a professional in the landscape industry, but I do talk to a number of people who think xeriscape or drought tolerant means you don't have to water it, you know. Well, I brought all these drought tolerant plants and they died after, you know, the summer. And I'm like, well, you got to water it like for the first few years to get it established. So that's a good point. People's expectations of the garden is probably a big challenge that you have to meet.
You know, you want to give people their dream garden because ultimately it is their garden. I walk away from it. You want to give them what they want and you want to give them what they can maintain and you want to give them something that is a healthful environment in as many ways as they're willing to tolerate. Drought tolerant is exactly that. Drought tolerant. It's like deer resistant. There's a big difference between deer resistance and deer proof. Deer proof is plastic plants.
That's a good point. I think deer tolerant plants is another kind of confusing thing for homeowners to come over.
Sure.
They're really looking for that plant that deers will not touch.
Right. They, any being, rabbit, deer, muskrat, I don't care what it is, human being, if they are hungry enough, they will eat anything.
Just kind of transitioning back to the do-it-yourselfer. I like
I
to
think
waste my money first before I decide I need to hire somebody to help me.
that.
Okay. Is there one element that you find like you could not spend enough money on? It creates so much impact and so much attention that it's worth any amount of money you can spend on it. Is there that one element in a garden? And please don't tell me it depends.
No, it does and it doesn't.
Okay.
Here's what I think, and I have kicked my own behind more than once for leaving things and not bringing them home to my own garden. I think gardens are such a soulful endeavor for so many people. The one item that I think that you should have in your garden is the one item that screams at you when you see it. Take me home. Whatever that is, it could be a big container that you see in the garden center. For one of the things I'm kicking myself out over is not buying an acid green container that wasn't frost resistant that I saw 2 years ago, and I still wish I had it. And it was maybe $65. And why didn't I buy that? Because I didn't feel like spending $65 that day.
That is so true.
And so a garden becomes a very personal thing, just like your home is a personal thing, when you see things that speak to you that you have to have. And don't not listen to that voice. Yeah, I mean, sure, there's budgetary constraints, but if you can afford it and you see it and you love it and you have to have it and every time you walk by it, it's going to make you smile, then that's the huge impact. It doesn't need to be a focal point. It doesn't need to be anything big. It could be something little. It could be a painted rock your kid made for you for Mother's Day in the second grade. But it's got to be something that speaks to you for some reason and personalizes your space and makes you happy.
That is such a great point. I'm not necessarily sure all the husbands out there are going to appreciate that, buy whatever makes you happy, but it makes a lot of sense because I, just like you, I have seen things and not bought things. And what even really gets me is when I travel somewhere to like San Francisco or New York and something I could have packed with me, but I didn't feel like spending $50. And then, the opportunity's gone.
Exactly.
But
Exactly.
the items that I have chosen, because I have learned from my mistakes from the past that I have bought, that were, I really had to wrestle with myself. Do I really need this? And yes, I do. And I bought it. But every time I walk by it, it does elicit some sort of response that is so pleasurable and it's worth it. So,
And
great point.
that's what it's all about. I mean, gardens are for pleasure. We don't have to have gardens to survive, particularly, yes, vegetable gardens and growing food, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But ornamental gardens are pleasure gardens and they should give you pleasure. If you sit outside and you regret spending the money it took to build the patio, then you built the wrong patio. You let somebody talk you into something that wasn't you, that you really didn't respond to. I know that if I walk off a project when it's done, number one, if it looks like I've never been there, and number two, if I come back a couple weeks later and find empty beer bottles sitting on the table, I'm happy because that means they're using this, the homeowner is using the space, and I've drawn them outside into the larger world and away from their four walls. And that's really important.
One last question for you, and then I will let you go. When people have a little scrapbook of magazines, little cutouts, you know, that they've been collecting for years, is that a good thing? I mean, when you walk into somebody's house and you're like, "Oh, here we go, here's the scrapbook." Is that something that's hard for you as a designer, or do you think it helps?
I think it depends on how well a potential client, the one with the scrapbook or the millions of pictures, how literal they want to be. If they're pictures of, I like this, why did you pick this? I recently went to see a new client, and she had her almost her entire kitchen island covered with tears from magazines. And as I'm looking at them, I'm seeing a couple of common themes in all the pictures. She just pulled the picture because she liked it, but when you put them all together, they gave me a very clear direction of what inspired her visually. Now, whether those plants were, you bring up the idea of, let me backtrack a minute, a tropical garden in Nebraska. Well, why can't you? Why can't you have something with, big broad leaves and, the texture and the hot colors in Nebraska? Absolutely, you can. It may not be regionally appropriate, but if that's what you want, you can have that. There's many plants, particularly that communicate a certain idea. For example, a row of boxwood is always going to be formal, no matter where you put it, what you do with it, but it could be traditionally formal, or you could use it in a very contemporary way. So it's really those pictures, what they help a designer do is they help them see what you respond to as a client. And visually, what you like, and you can also begin to see repeated things. Like if you see the same white pergola in 15 pictures, you pretty well know that you got to have a white
Yeah, I
pergola
think we're going to be building you a white pergola.
next.
That makes a lot of sense because I'm such a visual person that I know I like, I can't, I might not be able to describe what I like, but when I see it, I know it. Or when I know it, I see it. Anyway, you know what I mean. And so pictures help me. So really, as a skillful designer, it's kind of your job to take all those pieces and figure out, okay, what is this client thinking? And
Well, you're exactly that, and that's what a plan does. But you'd be surprised at how many people can't read a plan. And you have to take the plan, and you have to take the pictures, and you say, "Look, here's where we're going to put this lovely white pergola, for example. Here's where we're going to put that mass of bold red foliage plants to give you that tropical feel. Or here's where we're going to put one big, beautiful." The big beautiful terracotta container that you had shipped back at, the price of your unborn child from Italy. Whatever. Here's where we're going to put the little handprint mosaic that your daughter made for you this Mother's Day.
Oh.
But the plan is the picture that helps the designer communicate what is right and necessary to create what the client wants. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. I wish I could see what you're saying, but yeah, I can. No, I'm
You can
just
see me
kidding.
wildly
I know.
gesticulating
Why don't
as I'm
you?
talking to
Yeah, why
you.
don't you sketch out what you're trying to communicate with me, and then maybe I'll understand. No, that makes a lot of sense. And Susan, it's been great talking with you. You're just a kick in the pants, and you're just a fun person to be around. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks a lot for having me, Jamie.
You are welcome.
Jamie, that was a really interesting interview. I really liked what Susan had to say about her approach to design and the fact that sometimes when she's looking at a design, the plants, the actual plants she's going to pick, are not her first consideration by any means. It's more the actual design itself. And that's an interesting way of looking at it, I thought.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the skills that designers, inherently have is they understand the structure of the garden. And so that's
And the
what,
right forms,
right.
yes.
And so, obviously as people who are not designers, we love plants, we love flowers. So I think that's one
Well,
of the the difference is that, you know, the two interviews between Rebecca Sweet and Susan Cohan is, you know, Susan Cohan definitely talks about the process of designing and how she pulls that out of her clients, you know, how she helps pull that out. Okay. Exactly. And then Rebecca Sweet, she offers more tips on plant selection as well as how to keep your garden looking well all season long, right? Wouldn't you say?
Because she does talk a lot about the importance of evergreens in your garden. And it really did make me go back and look at my garden a lot differently because I was actually interviewing her in late winter.
One other last thing about Susan Cohan's interview I thought was interesting is distinguishing the difference between a gardening coach and a landscape designer, which leads us into what our next podcast is going to be with Christina Sawitz, who is a gardening coach from the Seattle area. So that is a good interview that I actually had a chance to talk with her in Seattle a long time ago. So we're just now.
I can't wait to hear it because I just think Christina is such a talented container designer, particularly some of the colors that she puts together, folks, you wouldn't believe. So it'll be a very interesting interview, and I can't wait to hear more about it. And that'll be coming up next, you guys, very, very shortly.
Yes.
Because we're on a roll now.
We are. We've got things lined up, and they're ready to go. We just can't get them out to you fast enough. So once again, where to find us on the internet? At this point in time, you can still find us on www.nestinstyle.wordpress.com. That's going to change very soon. And don't worry.
And we'll stay tuned.
Yeah, so stay tuned. And then you can find me on Twitter under a number of different aliases, at Aha Modern Living, as well as at Nest in Style for both, you know, Teresa and I's podcast. And now for my new gardening book, I will also be on at Garden Rules Book on Twitter.
Well, I'm at Seasonal Wisdom, and I have been at Seasonal Wisdom, so that's where you'll find me.
There you go. And we also have a Nest in Style Facebook fan page. We need more fans, okay?
We do need more fans. We know you guys are out there. Fan us up and come back because we got a really great show for you lined up very, very soon. And thanks very much for dropping by, and we'd love to hear your comments. Let us know what you want to hear about. We got the news.
We got it, baby. All right.
All right.
We're out of here. Until next time, go grow something. We'll be right back.